Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Credentials Community Group weekly call. I'm going to go through the agenda real quick, starting with our usual front-end matter of intellectual property and the IRC. We'll pick a scribe. And our real topics, as we get into them, are going to be, we've got about a 5 minutes report out from the Consensus Stop COVID-19 Hackathon from Johnny Crunch. And then the main discussion for today is Chappie and the VP request spec. What's the status of those and how they work together? Okay, so IP note, this meeting is run under the auspices of the W3C and is subject to the community contributor license agreement, which all of our members have signed. If you are not a member and therefore have not signed it, then we may need to restrict your contributions I always come at this from the wrong way. Substantive contributions are problematic, but we welcome your input, especially with regard to comments and use cases and questions. We keep notes through IRC, so please join the IRC channel. Someone's got an echo there. And we also use the IRC to manage the queue. So just put a queue plus if you would like to join the queue. There are a little bit more details in the email, but that's the essence of it. And with that, we need to pick a scribe, someone who can take notes for us today. It's a fairly straightforward job, but somebody's got to do it. Is anyone willing to be scribe today?
I'll scribe.
And per our usual ritual,
oh, have a walk. Hi, Joe. Sorry. I can do
hi,
it.
Hi, Clea. Great. Thank you, Clea.
I'm not quite in there yet, but I'll get there.
Okay. Maybe well, I thank can. You. All right. Well, I'm going to move you in our records so you get credit for today. Thank you. That makes a big difference. Okay. Next up is introductions and reintroductions. Do we have anyone here who's new, who has not been on a call before? We would appreciate it if you give us a few words about yourself and what brought you to the Credentials Community Group. Anyone who's new? I see Adam Lemon seems to have joined. Oh, Alan. Alan, if you have voice connection, please introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. My name's Alan. I'm calling in from Accredible here. I'm the CTO at Accredible. We're a digital credentialing company. We work with open badges, and we have some blockchain credentials and some digital certificates. Just keen to, you know, understand more about what's going on with the standards and the creation of them, and you know, feeling like I you know, want to get more involved in the community.
Cool. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Great. And I called out Adam Lemon. Maybe you've been here before, but I haven't seen you. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Adam Lemon here from Convergence Tech and Tribe ID. I sort of closely following along with the community and beginning to sit in on some of the calls over the past few months, primarily in the sort of education sector, also closely linked with open badges and some of the other work happening across those groups too.
Great. Welcome, Adam. Anyone Thank else you. Who's new today? Okay, and then we'll do a quick call out, see if any current members want to reintroduce themselves, because of course folks who've joined since you joined are not here for your introduction. Who has not done a introduction recently? Interestingly, is Heather on the call? Heather's first on the list. And then Kim, you're second. Kim, if you'd like to reintroduce yourself.
Sure, yeah. I am Kim Hamilton Duffy, one of the co-chairs of this group, and on the DIF steering committee as well, Decentralized Identity Foundation. I'm the architect of the Digital Credentials Consortium, which is a 12-university effort rebuilding educational credentials based on technologies like verifiable credentials and DID. We have a meeting most Mondays, Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force, which many people from the education group on this call are joining. So we're having good conversations there about how to actually use verifiable credentials in our systems. So yes, I'll include a link to that. And yeah, that's me.
Great. Thanks, Kim. And I'm sorry, did you mention you were the co-chair of this fine group?
Yes, I did. So you may know me from, are you sure you're muted? And everyone mute yourself.
That's funny. All right. Well, thanks, Kim. Next up is our announcements. We do try and maintain a web page that keeps track of announcements relevant to the community. If your favorite announcement is not on here, please put yourself on the queue. If it's a regular thing, we're happy to add it to the web page, or if it's an upcoming thing. So the only announcements we have listed right now are the weekly CCG call, which are on the Verifiable Credentials for Education, which Kim just linked to. And then we also have the DID resolution calls, which have been moved. I think they're now, it looks like this was partially corrected. Dimitri or Marcus, can you clarify that? I think they're now on Mondays at 1 p.m. Is that right?
1 p.m. Pacific, yes.
1 p.m. Pacific. Okay, great. So we will take a note to update. The heading on the page is incorrect, but the detail is correct. Any other announcements?
Sorry,
I see Kalia was on the queue. Is anyone else just to respect the queue order? Go ahead, Kalia.
I just wanted to share tomorrow I'm presenting at the Festival of Identity about Domains of Identity, which is the book I have coming out, of which SSI is featured in chapter one about me and my identity. So I'll put links in the chat if folks are interested.
Please do put links in the chat. And I also wanted to elevate up Dimitri's correction that the DID resolution calls are 1 p.m. Eastern, not 1 p.m. Pacific. So we'll get that fixed. And then Kim, I see you on the queue.
Yeah, we had an action item from last week to add the secure data storage calls to the announcements page, but I realized I didn't have the up-to-date information. I think there was some kind of form people could fill out for a calendar invite, but I just, for some reason, I cannot find that information about how people would join and all of that. So I was wondering if someone can point the chairs to information about that or who we should contact to get that.
Yeah, I should have it too, but I'm probably in the same box as you are. I'll make a note to check my email. Unless someone on the call has a quick URL for us, that would be appreciated. Note to self.
I think I have a up-to-date link.
Okay, great. Thank you, Manon. Okay, next up is a quick review of a couple of action items. So the first one we're going to skip because that's our main topic today. So we'll cover number 117. That's what came up first on my ordering. Number 117 later in the call. Number 105 is closing the digital verification group. Kim, who's the best person to give a status update on this?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm following up on the last item. What are we talking about now?
The closing the DVCG. Ori, okay. Go for it, Ori. Thank you.
So I'm probably not the best person to give the update, but as far as I understand it, the only thing that's remaining is announcing on the DVCG website, which is the page's, you know, profile page for DVCG, that the group is closed, and then finalizing whatever closing procedures at the W3C need to happen. The group has no more active repos that are not archived other than the community preview website. So it basically just needs to be, the website needs to be updated to say it's closed, and then the CCG paperwork needs to be done.
Okay, and the website is the landing page at the w3.org, that website?
Yeah, I can find the link to it. It's the GitHub pages preview for the working group.
I'm sorry, I think I dropped off on that. Ori, did you mean the w3.org community page for the DVCG?
Yes. Yes. Sorry, okay. The mic is a little bit crazy here, but yes, it's just the GitHub Pages community website.
Okay, that sounds good. It's on the chairs to move forward, so we will do that. Thanks for the update, Ori. And the third issue then is a process summary for VCWG.
Yes, this is Dan.
Where are we at? Chairs?
Yeah.
I'm looking at this. Oh, this is Dan and Manu. Go ahead,
yes,
Dan.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. We can hear.
Yes, so Manu and I talked about this. We actually we wrote down the outline of a proposal, and I'm going to flesh it out a little bit. The main question that we have at this point is, where do you want that process to live? Do you want it to just go into the issue? Do you want a separate document that lives somewhere? Where would you like the process to, the description of the process to live?
That's a great question. Kim or Chris, I think ultimately we want to put it into the general process document, but should we just have Dan put it directly there or put it in issue? And what do you think?
I'm fine with it being in the regular registration document, just as a section for the work group associated items.
Okay, so Dan, let me get you a link to that, unless you have it already. But we have a
You can either drop it in here or send, or just email me or something. That's fine.
Yeah, I'll email it to you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dan. All right, those were the three action items we had flagged for today's call. So we're heading into the Stop COVID-19 Hackathon. Let me check the queue, and then we're gonna give Johnny Crush the floor. Okay, so next up, Consensus just ran a Stop COVID-19 Hackathon, mm-hmm. and I think the winners were announced yesterday. So we invited Jonathan Holt to give us a report out. How did it go? Jonathan, I don't know if you're here or you might be muted. I see you in IRC. Okay, well, Jonathan may have stepped away from the call. I'll give him another few seconds in case he's fighting with the mute button.
Invented a new mystery category, murder by the mute button.
Indeed.
How about now?
We did hear something.
Yeah, Skype doesn't seem to like my my fancy microphone. So this is my AirPods. So, yeah, so I'm Jonathan Holt. I am the CMIO, the Chief Medical Informatics Officer of Consensus Health. So it's a spin out of Consensus AG proper. And we just started the company in March, beginning of March, March 2nd. And we were supposed to have this huge announcement at HIMSS, the health IT meeting in Orlando. And we were going to be on stage a half hour before President Trump and actually have this big announcement. But suddenly this whole viral pandemic happened and we had to sort of reprioritize what we're going to do. So the hackathon was my idea because I, as you guys know, I've actually participated in or I've been to about five hackathons. And I love hackathons. I think it really helps bring out all the good that there is in the world of these revolutionary ideas to turn into reality. And it, if you guys remember, I actually created the IPID DID method at a hackathon, at a distributed health hackathon back in, like, I think it was 2017. Because I was playing with Indy, it didn't quite do what I wanted it to do. And basically, on the weekend, really just hacked together some code actually to get it to work. When I presented that back at the Rebooting Web of Trust in Boston, back in, I think that was September, October of 2017. So the hackathon was a huge success. We had over 400 participants from 70 different countries. We had 50 plus mentors sign up to actually help define the problem statements and help guide the teams. We had 40 plus projects finalized, and we just announced the winners yesterday. And so the what I really wanted was just this mindset of not just being helpless bystanders. The hacker mentality is you dig in, get your hands dirty, and you try to solve hard problems with the right attitude, skills, and awareness. And really, it's the attitude that you're not going to be helpless, a bystander during this crisis. You have the skills to do something, and you have the awareness of actually where those skills could be put to work. And so we had the three winning teams. The third place winner was the Decentralized Pandemic Reserve, which really had to do with the economic models for incentivizing reserves for pandemics and really understanding where the hotspots were. They had really interesting scientific background with integration with Python notebooks. They used Aragon smart contracts. So certainly there was an emphasis on the Ethereum platform since it was sponsored by Consensus, but we didn't limit people to specifically using Ethereum. If they're actually going to use other blockchain technologies, we wanted to show interoperability with the other blockchains as well as the Ethereum platform. The second place winner was the decentralized supply chain management. This was 3D printed PPEs, personal protective equipment, in Greece. And they really modeled the roles of suppliers, manufacturers, pharmacists, physicians, and patients in creating a smart contract actually to work out the integration of supply chain management and to spin up a basically third-party printing of PPEs during a crisis and how to distribute those specifications, authenticate those specifications, and disseminate those through supply chain management, which I found fascinating. And then the winning team that came in first place was D-Plasma, and they actually use verifiable credentials. And the convalescence of plasma during the COVID crisis. So there is some evidence that actually people, if you watch the movie Contagion, it really was this idea of you can donate your plasma and those antibodies that are in your plasma could be actually beneficial in the immune response to actually to fight off. If you've been exposed to COVID before, you might be a good donor to actually donate your plasma. And so they used verifiable credentials using the blood typing and the donation, and it did it in a way that actually was privacy preserving, which just blew my mind. That actually was a really great application of verifiable credentials in a healthcare setting. Not to mention that the verifiable credentials of the providers and really across borders, which is actually what I think was actually fascinating and to help, you know, solve this crisis. So we did have some other submissions that did use verifiable credentials. There were the obviously immunity credentials are hot. There is a few teams that actually tried to implement those. I'm heavy down in the weeds with immunity credentials. And so I think I was a bit harsh on some of the presentations as not being necessarily either thorough or up to snuff. And so I was probably a little bit too harsh on them given my expertise in this area. But it really, I think, spoke to this the three main areas where blockchain technologies could help in this crisis. It really is information, resources, and people. Information, that it's authenticated and secure. So where are the hotspots? Who's at risk? Where are the front lines of this battle? Second is the resources. It's secure and trusted, really sort of the supply chain management. And then the people, the heroes on the ground in this fight, who are they? Do they have the proper resources, training, credentials to fight this fight? So in short, the mantra was data is the medicine we need, and blockchain is a tool to help fight this. So in the part of this, we actually adopted McKinsey's approach to these five phases of this crisis, and those are resolve, resilience, return, reimagination, and reform. Resolve is that during this current crisis, we can contain, mitigate, and suppress the virus, but really it's standing resolute in the character and how we fight this battle. Second is the resilience, the ability to persevere during a crisis, and then return to some semblance of normal, but really it's about reimagining and re-engineering what the new normal will look like. And actually, that's finally in the phase of reform. So we had, again, a phenomenal, successful hackathon. We had some VIP judges. So Vitalik was a judge, Joe Lubin. Then we actually had some from the Health and Human Services. So Jose Hereta, who is the CIO of HHS. And then Brian Dellendorf from Hyperledger was a judge. There were four or five of us from Consensus Health. And overall, it was a very successful hackathon, and I'm really happy to see where they highlighted verifiable credentials.
Very cool. Thank you, Jonathan. I saw Kim hop onto the queue.
Yeah, you mentioned one aspect of the being privacy preserving, and I was wondering how you determine that, or you know, some more details on that. Is it something, you know, either what techniques did they use, or you know, was that sort of combined with some, you know, kind of real world considerations of privacy and sort of things like de-identification, re-identification, like sort of how, what's the thinking behind privacy preserving?
Yeah, I was hoping to see more of applications of zero-knowledge proofs. And actually, one of the teams did submit a contact tracing using zero-knowledge proofs. And I think it fell short of really using blockchain technologies to actually to solve that. So it actually left that bit out. But at least in the D plasma, there was this offer and accept in the smart contract that included your blood type. But the actually ultimately it was the pointer to the public key of your DID. And so that really, I think it was a verifiable credential that actually was off chain, off the smart contract that actually was presented. And really actually what was in the contract was just basically the DID.
Very cool. Thanks for that update, Jonathan. Now we are going to move on to the main event for today, which is an update on where Chappie's at and how that integrates with the newly approved work item of the VP request spec. And I'm not sure who's leading it. Manu, you might be.
Yeah, I'll go with support.
We did miss that there was supposed to, you know, be the announcement about nominations and everything.
Sure. So I just, on the agenda, I just had it at the end. So next week will be a town hall to talk with any of the candidates. So get your self-nomination in. Send a simple note to the list. There are three seats available, A, B, and C. Seat A has 1 year left on its cycle. Seat B has 2 years. Seat C has 3 years. And what will happen is next year, the chairs will run an election, hopefully for just one seat. So every year we will get one new seat as per the charter. Chris, anything else you wanted to cover on that?
Just that there's an opportunity to speak to the community and you know, beforehand, and then once we know how many people are in the nominations, we'll figure out how which voting system to use. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Chris. And with that, we will queue up. I don't know, Manu, if you're leading the charge.
Yeah.
Or.
Yeah, I'll start off, but it's going to be a joint effort between myself, Dave Longley, Dimitri, Mike Varley, and maybe someone else from SecureKey, if
okay.
Mike's not here.
Great.
And then there is a slide deck that goes along with this talk. So the slide deck is in IRC. So feel free to join. Everyone should. It's globally viewable, and I see people joining, so that's good. So the chairs had asked us to do kind of a quick presentation on the credential handler API and the verifiable presentation request work item. So the credential handler API, or it's affectionately called Chappie. Chappie became a work item a couple of years ago, and then the verifiable presentation specification became a work item just a little while ago. And what we're going to try and what we're going to try and do is kind of talk a bit about what Chappie is and how the VP request spec fits in. We will touch on DIDCOM a tiny bit, not as deeply as we did at the Internet Identity Workshop for those of you that were there. But you know, we will of course have a QA session after all this stuff to kind of go over where this might go. We were going to do a demo today. We probably are not going to have time to do it, so we may schedule another time to do a demo. Haven't really even discussed that with the chairs yet. So we were hoping on doing a demo today, but you know, didn't feel like we could fit everything in. Basically, what we're going to do today is just cover basics of credential handler API, Chappie, and the verifiable presentation request format. Okay, so starting on slide one, go ahead and go over to slide two. The slide numbers are in the bottom right, if you're wondering. So what we're talking about here is, you know, how Chappie fits into the verifiable credentials ecosystem. So for those of you that have been with us for a while, this image looks familiar to you, or should look familiar to you. We have an issuer, a holder, and a verifier in the ecosystem. Issuers issue verifiable credentials. Holders hold on to those verifiable credentials, usually in digital wallets. And then verifiers request verifiable credentials as presentations from the holders, right? And each one of these boxes is effectively a role in our ecosystem. Chappie and DIDCOM basically address how you get data from point A to point B. So how do you get data from the issuer to the holder? How do you get data from the holder to the verifier? And really, Chappie and DIDCOM are kind of in charge of getting this data from point A to point B. They do it in different ways. They have different layering. But in general, this is about moving data around between the different roles in the ecosystem. So if we were to take a look at those arrows on slide two, and go ahead and jump to slide three. On slide three, we kind of expand those arrows and show what's going on inside those arrows. And what we'll see is these little purple boxes are really request-response cycles, right? So one role will send a request to the other role. The other role responds responds with a response, right? And Chappie is basically the dumb pipe between these roles. So it is literally, it's just a communication channel that the requests and the responses flow over. And fundamentally, that's all CHAPI is. It's a dump pipe. You send requests and responses over it. It's a way of getting data between these various parties in the ecosystem. Now let's go ahead and jump to, I want to highlight that, you know, that's a bit of a hand wave, but it is a decent hand wave, right? The next slide, we're going to go into more of the details. And if your eyes glaze over, that's totally fine, because all you really need to understand about CHAPI, if you're not implementing, is, you know, it's a pipe where you move data back and forth over that pipe. Okay, so next slide, slide four. This kind of highlights how CHAPI really works and why we need it as a transport mechanism. So usually when people talk about the web, they think in terms of like the web browser and HTTP, and you send messages back and forth through HTTP. That is one way of getting data around the web between these various parties, these roles on the web. But that's not the only way. And specifically, CHAPI does use HTTP, but it uses another mechanism that not a lot of people know about that exists on the web in web browsers to move data between multiple websites. So before we get into, you know, moving that data, it's important to understand kind of the security model around operating systems and web browsers, right? So you can think of the security model for web browsers as every single tab that you have open in a web browser, every single tab has a security firewall around it. So one tab cannot easily, let's just say one tab can't talk to the other unless you do some special things, right? So by default, the tab that you have open to Yelp can't talk to the tab that you have open in Gmail, right? So that's how we keep your data safe between different websites in web browsers. So these dashed red lines that you see around the web app A and web app B and CHAPI Mediator and those things, those are the you can think of those as like the firewalls around your browser tabs. Okay. The other thing to understand with web browsers is that they can actually talk to apps on your desktop or on your mobile phone. So for example, if you're browsing the web, there's a link that is effectively a mail to link, an email link. When you click that, it'll actually open the link in an email app, or you can open it in an email app. There are other special types of links for like firing up the Uber app or the Yelp app or Google Maps or any of that stuff, right? And that is where the web browser kind of sends a request from a website over to the app and is like, you know, tells the app, for example, if it's Google Maps, hey, open at this lat long position or open with this search query. And then the app kind of takes over from there. So the big problem that needs to be solved in this ecosystem is how do you get an issuer to talk to a digital wallet, or how do you get a digital wallet to talk to a verifier? How do you move the data between if in the web browser everything's firewalled off from each other? That's where CHAPI comes in, right? So CHAPI is uses some tricks in the browser to open up these communication channels in a safe way between a digital wallet and an issuing platform and a verification platform and that sort of thing. This slide is really important to kind of understand, so I want to spend a little bit of time on it. There's some things here that are also not quite obvious to folks that don't that haven't seen browser architecture up close before. One of those things is if you look on the left here, there's something called Website A, and then on the right there's Web App A. So a lot of people don't draw the distinction between like a website and the program that runs in your browser tab, right? Those are actually two very different things, right? The website gives you HTML, it gives you JavaScript, which is basically kind of the brains of the page, and it executes it as what we're calling a web app here. So in your web browser, you're actually running a client-side application. It is something that is quite literally executing on your web browser on your machine. It's not executing on the website. And so understanding that is important to understand, you know, how all this stuff kind of fits together. But understand that there's the two things to take away from this is the web apps themselves, the applications are firewalled from each other. That's the first takeaway. The second takeaway is a website gives software to your web browser to run. That is the web app, and it is a very different thing. The website is different from the web app when that happens. Let me pause here. Dave Longley, did I hit on everything that you wanted to cover? And then also, are there any questions about anything we've covered so far?
So the one thing that I would add to this is you can see that in order to run a web application, you download HTML and JavaScript into your browser, and then the application itself runs in your browser. And so what's important here is that Chappie is a feature that gets added to your browser that enables two different web apps to communicate with each other, to handle requests for verifiable presentations and other types of data. And so what's key is that the Chappie piece that gets added to your browser enables those web apps to talk to each other instead of having those web apps talk, instead of having the websites or the web servers talk directly, for example, to your digital wallet. So the communication is not happening through HTTP. It's happening within the browser, within web apps. And that's really important for helping maintain state in those applications. So if you're on one web application and you want to request a credential, say, for example, you're in a verifier web app and you want to request a credential from a digital wallet, you don't have to completely change websites and switch over and lose the state of the application you were in. You can make a request through Chappie to have the credential sent through from your digital wallet web app over to the verifier web app. This also enables, this Chappie feature also enables the browser to present multiple choices for different types of digital wallets or different digital wallets you might have installed. So a verifier website or an issuer website can either request a presentation from you or try to give you a credential that's been issued. And then the Chappie mediator piece, this feature that's built into the browser, enables you to select the digital wallet you want to use to fulfill that request. And all of that enables these messages to pass through from one web app to another, where the mediator, the Chappie mediator, doesn't care what that message looks like. It just passes the request off to a digital wallet that has expressed the fact that it can support that type of request. It is then entirely up to the digital wallet to understand how to parse that request and create an appropriate response. And that's what we're going to get to a little bit later when we get to the VP request spec, because that's about defining a specific type and shape for one kind of request that can flow through Chappie or through other channels.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Jonathan Holtz on the queue.
Yeah, it's just a question about the key value store. You're using like the local storage within, and what's the domain of that storage?
So the key, when you say the key value store, I'm not sure what you refer to, but the digital wallets that are that manifest as web applications or verifier issuer applications they can use whatever technologies, web or otherwise. They can talk to their own servers from where the web apps were served, or they can use underlying browser technology. None of that is related to how Chappie works in any way.
So it's not inside that web app application. You're actually storing key value pairs. You're actually storing it on a server somewhere.
That is entirely up to the digital wallet web application to decide. So a digital wallet that is a web app could store things using local storage APIs in the web browser, or they could send that information to a website to have it stored, or using some of the new work that's going on in the SDS group, working group over at with the joint work item between DIF and CCG, a digital wallet could encrypt verifiable credentials and send them to an encrypted data vault and have those stored in the cloud. So there's that is entirely up to the digital wallet implementation, and the Chappie piece that is a new feature of the browser doesn't care about that aspect.
All right. It hit me that, you know, without a demo, all this feels pretty abstract. So there's a video here that I'm linking to in IRC that shows you, like, what the screens actually end up looking like in practice. There is a caveat with the video in that the video is, I think, almost 3 years old at this point. So things have really come a long way since the video was shot, but the general principle is still there, right? It's that the Chappie mediator on slide 4 is the new thing that's installed in the browser. It doesn't require any kind of software install. It happens automatically. It works across every major browser that we know of, modern major browsers. So it won't work on IE11, but it will work on Edge and Firefox and Chrome and Safari and all that kind of stuff. The big thing about Chappie is that it's just available to 2.8 billion people immediately today, right? And so you don't have to convince people to install an app. You don't have to convince them to install a digital wallet on their desktop or anything. It's just broad diffusion of the technology into the populace. And what the mediator does is it sends requests, it forwards requests on, right? It's kind of a verifiable presentation request response router. You can think of it in the web browser. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Dave Longley is correcting me. It does work on IE11. And I know that was a painful thing to get working. Okay, so that's the kind of the architecture of how Chappie works. Go ahead and switch to slide 5. So there's a question around, this came up at IIW, how's Chappie layered? Chappie is a dumb pipe. Again, it is basically just a pipe that information flows over, much like HTTP and Bluetooth Low Energy and QR codes. You know, it's just data can move over Chappie. And there are multiple other things that we move over Chappie today, like authorization capability requests and responses, verifiable presentation requests and responses. In theory, we should be able to move DIDCOM messages over Chappie as well. And so the thing to understand about Chappie is that it's kind of a low transport layer thing. But something that's really important for us to deploy for anyone that has web-based wallets. The other thing to mention about, Jonathan, your question is I think what you were getting at, I believe, was a question around privacy, right? So do we have to put all of our data up on these servers and so that they can rifle through the data, or does Chappie protect it in some way? As Dave said, Chappie doesn't have an opinion about that. But the rest of the people in this ecosystem absolutely do. It's why we're creating encrypted data vaults so that all data is encrypted in transit and at rest at the server, so the servers can't rifle through our personal data. All compute is done on the client, which means that key value store, Jonathan, you're talking about, is on your machine. It is the only time the data becomes decrypted is when you decrypt it on your device in that web app. So there are a number of privacy implications to the architecture, but they're above in the layers above Chappie. Okay, so with this, we're at the point where we can kind of start talking a bit about the verifiable presentation request spec on slide 6. Dmitry, do you want to take things from here?
Sure. How's my sound quality? Can you hear me okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So, like Manu said, if Chappie is a sort of a dumb pipe, is a transport protocol, and it really does just expose two function calls to any sort of JavaScript client-side apps, which is get and store. So if Chappie is that protocol, get and store, what are you getting and what are you storing, right? What are those actually queries look like where an app is requesting a credential? So I'll go ahead and move to slide 7. It's important to remember that this is just the data model app, not even really a protocol, more like the format of the query, which you can then use to build a protocol. So Chappie is an API. The presentation request spec is just the format of the queries. They can work over Chappie. They can be wrapped in a DIDCOM envelope. They can be serialized to a URL, they meaning these queries, can be serialized to a URL so that you can pass them around between mobile apps, so any number of actual transport mechanisms. So switching over to slide 8, in the browser, this is what it looks like to request a verifiable presentation via this query using Chappie. So Chappie exposes that navigator.credentials.get. Now, then we have the envelope that is specific to the credential API, which is another W3C standard built into browsers. And that's that web colon and the verifiable presentation colon. And all that means is the JavaScript is requesting a credential. It is a web credential of type verifiable presentation. So that bit is outside of the Chappie spec and specific to credential spec. So what we're going to talk about in this specification is the thing in bold, is what does the request actually look like? So, and as you see on slide 9, we don't have an example for what this looks like via DIDCOM. We hope to work with the DIDCOM community in the CCG on the support item to spec that out of if you wanted to use these queries over DIDCOM, here's how you would do it. So stay tuned for that. So let's look at slide 10, which gives us a high-level overview of what do these queries actually look like. And they have several high-level properties. The important one is the query property, where you give it one or more queries to send to the browser. And the browser, via the mediator, passes it on to your wallet provider, your server-side app somewhere, or a native app, or whatever. So you're passing in one or more queries of various types. And there's also the challenge in the recipient field. Recipients is an optional field, similar to the recipients in the JSON Web Encryption Standard, where you are specifying key agreement keys so that you can encrypt your queries and encrypt the results coming back. Right. So that handles encryption. And then we have the challenge parameter, which again is similar to the nonce and the challenge mechanism in many authentication protocols. And this is required because the only thing, and it's right there in the name, that these queries are requesting are verifiable presentations in response to some sort of challenge from a web app. So that's the high-level overview. We have one or more queries that you're sending in that get. There's the required challenge and optional encryption parameters, the recipients. So let's dive into those queries specifically.
Hey, Dimitri, you've got Adrian on the queue. I don't know if you want to take that now.
Sure. Yes, Adrian.
Well, it might be after this last slide, but I'm wondering what is the relationship between this format, this data model, and the transactional authorization request data model?
Good question. There is no relationship yet. So both are very much in progress specs. I'm in conversation with Justin Richer, and maybe he can speak more to this if we have a few more minutes. But we will be collaborating between the two. At the moment, there is no relation.
But they're equivalent in some sense.
No, they're slightly. The transactional authentication is an authentication protocol. This is just.
No, authorization. It's transactional authorization.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with it.
The Justin thing is transactional authorization.
Oh, sure, yes, okay. Then, yes, at the moment, there's no relation. We're both aware of each other's work. We're in conversation. Hopefully, there can be alignment where that makes sense. But at the moment, they are unrelated. Okay, thank you. So let's hop on to slide 11, which zooms in on one of those queries in that list of queries. So this is one of the common types of queries, a query by example. And that concept should be familiar from users of document stores like MongoDB or CouchDB or a lot of those type of mechanisms, right? We often model our queries as we're going to pass a template, an example query in the database or the store, we're going to return it. So this is a similar concept. It is a query by example type. We, for user interface purposes, provide a reason, and that's just to display to the person on the other side of the browser. You're explaining why you're requesting this verifiable presentation. And then you're providing an example in which you can say, you can specify the type of the credential that's wrapped in a verifiable presentation. So for example, this one is asking for a permanent resident card credential. You can specify subject ID, issuer, I only want credentials from the United States government or whatever. You can specify credential schema, specific fields that you're filtering on. And this query is passed on to the wallet. The wallet does the processing, does the filtering, fulfills the query that you're presenting, and returns to you the verifiable presentation that contains the results of those queries. So any questions about the presentation request spec or the query by example specifically?
And we have Christopher on the queue.
Yeah, back in Leon, you had shown a special version, I believe, of the Firefox browser that allowed for use of FIDO keys and things of that nature with this protocol. Is that changed or any new updates on being able to do FIDO-tech keys for these?
Good question. So I'll let Man or Dave answer that, but just to clarify, that was a modified browser to work with a web authentication protocol. So that is very different. But Man or Dave, do we have any developments on that front?
Yeah, so I'll let Dave take the technical developments on that front. Fundamentally, we're waiting for the web auth end stuff to be exposed to the browser in a specific way. So a bit of a hand wave, but there are technical limitations that still exist that don't let us do that in every single browser today. But that doesn't mean that we can't do FIDO2. So you can do FIDO2 to log into your digital wallet, for example. What that demo showed, it was a modified version of Chromium that used a FIDO key to digitally sign a verifiable presentation. So we were actually using a hardware-backed key to digitally sign a verifiable presentation. We can't do that unless something has changed recently yet. But Visa, MasterCard, PayPal all need the same functionality from WebAuthn and the FIDO2 stuff. And the group is exploring the web authentication. W3C official standards group for web authentication is exploring how to get that support into the browser. Dave, have you heard anything from them lately on where they are there?
There's agreement to add the support that we need, and so it's just a matter of browsers implementing. So it's just a matter of time before the features that we need should be implemented in major browsers.
So for this demo, where are the keys being generated, and how does somebody protect those keys or move it to another browser?
Great question. So, and let's see, we may get into it a little bit in the deep dive slides, but it's important to note that the keys are only handled by the server-side wallet provider, preferably using a hardware trusted module or key management system. So the keys do not live on the application or the browser. They are only in the wallet provider app. And so you would be using a Chappie or this verifiable presentation request spec to say, to ask the wallet provider to do something with the key. Can you sign this credential, or can you encrypt this, and so on. Does that answer your question?
A little bit. I'm always going to follow it down to where the key is stored, how is it stored, how is it restored.
And that is outside of the purview of the spec. Key is stored in the wallet provider in a key management system.
Hey, everybody out.
And just a quick reminder, please mute if you're not speaking. Madam, back over to you. I think that concludes the... Oh, no, actually, I think we have Kim on the queue for questions.
Actually, I have to, so I'll just follow up offline.
Great, thank you. We're at the top of the hour?
We are at the top of the hour.
All right.
Okay, so...
Go ahead.
So Kim, I saw you try and pop off. Manu, you were on the queue. You want to say anything as we round up?
Nope. Back over to you, Joe.
Okay. Well, that's it for this week. Next week we have the town hall, and then on June 2nd, we're going to be hosting a report out on the SVIP Interop Plug Fest, which occurred earlier this month. So thank you all. Talk to you next week.